efforts. It was a good test for the containment dome's integrity, which was going to be challenged by Jupiter, but otherwise did nothing other than raise the blood pressure of the observers along with the water pressure inside. After Jan had finished her familiar algorithm, they depressurized and drained the dome and prepared it for Io, the innermost of the four large moons, the Galilean satellites. Io's atmosphere is exotic and variable, but thin almost to the point of being a vacuum. It can get up to about 100 nanobars and down to 1. The air on the top of Mount Everest is 330 million nanobars. The fact that it's a poisonous mixture of sulfur dioxide and sodium isn't relevant to human survival. A human would freeze solid in the middle of explosive decompression, not having time to notice that the air smelled bad. Still, it was possible that Io's surface conditions were not unusual in the universe, so they went ahead with the model. A frigid near vacuum with a scattering of frozen sulfur dioxide on the floor. They varied the temperature from 100 degrees Kelvin to 130 degrees, enough for some of the sulfur dioxide to sublimate and then fall back as snow. The artifact faithfully mirrored the changes in temperature, but otherwise ignored the investigation. It wasn't much of a change to simulate Pluto, just suck out the sulfur dioxide, lower the temperature to minus 233, and put in a dusting of snow, solidified nitrogen, methane, and carbon monoxide, with a squirt of ethane flavoring the nitrogen. To any Earth creature, it would be indistinguishable from Io, but conceivably might make all the difference in the world to you, if you were used to living on a snowball in hell. They used the spacesuits for the last time. That was a part of the deal, that they record the suit's performance in the various environments, and then sent them back to NASA. They would be no help for Jupiter. For the other planets, they had simulated surface conditions. That wouldn't be possible on Jupiter. Theoretical models allowed the possibility of a rocky core, but you can't get there. As you descend through Jupiter's increasingly thick atmosphere, it becomes more like a star than a planet. The temperature coming to about 30,000 degrees and the pressure about 100 million atmospheres. It's liquid metallic hydrogen there. And if anything could live under those conditions, it was unlikely to find Earth interesting. Jan decided to try two Jovian regimes, the one deep enough into the atmosphere that it enjoyed the same air pressure as Earth at sea level, though the temperature was minus 100 degrees Celsius, and the deeper one where the pressure was 5 atmospheres, but the temperature was an Earth-like 0 degrees. In both cases, the atmosphere was about 90% hydrogen, and the rest helium with a little spicing, methane, ammonia, ethane, acetylene. In terms of temperature and pressure, it was a lot easier to handle than Venus. But carbon dioxide isn't flammable. She looked at the huge tanks of hydrogen waiting for the high-pressure phase and tried not to think of it as a fireball waiting to happen. It was more than 1,000 times the quantity of hydrogen that exploded in the Hindenburg disaster. By now, most of the people, Jan included, had little hope that the artifact was going to respond to anything. When it did, they thought it was an experimental error. The thing inside the artifact didn't think, not the way humans think. It didn't pose problems and solve them. It didn't wonder about its place in the universe. It felt no real need to communicate. Its mandate was survival, and it had powerful tools to that end. If the life that decorated the surface of this planet seemed to be a threat, it could simplify the situation. It had patience, fortunately, beyond any human reckoning of the term. All this tapping and zapping and flashing, it could stop the annoyance with one exercise of will, fry the planet clean. But a central part of it was still out there. It could wait for its return. Maybe, it finally decided, speed up the return by tapping back. When the changeling got off the plane at the Apia airport, the place was crazy with celebration, even though it was 3 in the morning. A couple of dozen young men and women danced and clapped and sang in harmony. Bunting and flags were everywhere. When it had boarded in Hawaii, it couldn't help noticing that several of the Caucasian passengers were unusually old. When the singing stopped, while it was waiting for its luggage, it found out what the story was. It was the 60th anniversary.